It's Jarvis Leatherby here from the heavy metal band Night Demon, and you're watching CMS TV.
Right, that is a band called Deeth featuring the one and only David Ellefson. What do you think of that, Eric?
That was pretty heavy, man.
That was the antithesis of the Kenny Olsen song, wasn't it?
Right.
We went from one extreme to another. Now, David will be with us in a second. I just texted him, and he's running a couple of minutes late, but he will be here in a second.
I have a Dave Ellefson story of how I first met him.
Okay.
And this, I think, was 2009. I was playing in the band Earshot.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were pulling through Arizona, I believe. And at the venue we were at, what would be Dave comes walking out. And I, right away, I said to him, I'm like, hey, man, you know who you look like? You look exactly like Dave Ellefson. and he's like, yeah, it's because I am Dave Ellefson. And I was like, oh, snap. I'm like, and we took a picture. I was trying to find the photo. I cannot find it anywhere.
Right.
It must be on an older computer. I don't know. But
spent a week with him last week. You could have taken a picture then.
Well, the only time I was up close. No, right. I did see him at Starbucks once, and I didn't bother him. And then right. I saw him right at the end when we were leaving. Everybody gets on buses.
Right.
To leave out of there. The artists had their own bus. DJ Will from KNAC days. Everybody knows. He helped us get our bus, and Dave was there. And again, I didn't talk to him. I just didn't, you know,
right. bug him. Well, here, you could talk to him now. It is Mr. David Ellefson. There he is.
Hey.
How you doing, sir?
What's happening?
Dude, we just played To Hell and Back the single, and my goodness, that's some heavy stuff.
I'd say it's going the right direction.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, first and foremost, man, welcome back, my friend. It's good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
We were just talking, Eric and myself, and I don't know if you know Eric or not, but Eric is Stephen Piercy's guitar player.
So, oh, I just saw you then.
Well, right, we're on the cruise.
Yes. Yeah. Good job, by the way. I caught your show. It was super fun. I stood up on the upper deck back there and watched it. It was super good, man. I like it.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
He was just telling us that he saw you in Starbucks, but didn't want to come up and talk to you.
No, I didn't want to. I was just like, because I know how it is. Because you're a very iconic guy. And I mean, when I was thinking about you, I was thinking, how awesome was it back in the day when MTV used your bass line for their news thing? Like that, you had to thought that's when you arrived, when they were like, MTV News, you hear it. Ding, 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 ding. First.
So funny story about that. Two funny stories, right? So first of all, I missed the whole thing because we were on tour. So I have no idea. People like you come up to me all the time, go, oh my God, that bass line. I'm like, did they play it that much? I mean, you know,
we were
on tour, right? So I missed every time I watch it, they've used the optional one, which is the little DJ scratch. Right. Like MTV News, right? So I just figured that was what they always use. But people tell me all these years later, oh my God, it was on every day, all the time. And I remember the first time I had heard it, me and Dave and Chris Poland had an apartment together that we got. It was over in Silver Lake. And I remember I was there's kind of the kitchen was open to the main room. We always had MTV on in the background. And Chris was actually doing the dishes. And there's like a Bowflex. Remember Bowflex?
It was rubber band.
Yeah, so I'm like kind of on the Bowflex. Gar used to come over with a cigarette in his mouth and lift weights on the Bowflex, you know. But not exactly the fitness guy, right? So Chris, like, you know, it plays. You know, you heard it here first. Doo-doo-doo, right? And Chris goes, was that our song? Was that us? You know, like this moment. And I was like, I don't know. It goes by so quick.
Right.
So then the next time it comes up, it's the DJ scratch. Well, maybe it was just a one-off, you know, a freebie. But, you know, then it turns out it was a thing. So, you know, so well, I'm glad you liked it. You could have said hi at Starbucks. Probably the only not good time to catch me at Starbucks is like 7 a.m. when you're like, you know, everybody's kind of trying to get with the plan, you know.
Our whole lives, you know what I mean? Like the fans don't really know me all that well. Like I put on a hat and no one recognized me. I put a San Diego baseball cap on.
Yeah.
No one came up to me. Only if I had the hat off did they notice me from the show or Piercy's band. That was it.
Sure. Yeah. Good way to go incognito. You know, the first night I remember I went to bed pretty early. I was in bed by like 10:30. So I was up at, you know, 7 a.m. and it was a ghost town. I mean, the night before it's rocking like a Vegas casino, you know, next morning at 7 a.m. I was like, what, did everybody jump overboard? Like, where is everybody?
It's good for us at Starbucks though. Cause no one was in line, right?
I mean, come on. How awesome is it to have like a real Starbucks? Not we proudly brew, but like the real Starbucks, you can use your app on your phone. I mean, that was like my office. I'm like, this is where I'm going to do, just hang out. And it was just a great place to chill, you know? So
I used Susan's gift cards because for the first 3 days, she thought she was acting like she was treating me to stuff, but it was all getting billed to my card on the room. So that was like a way. Right. So that old trick. So that was her way of kind of paying it back. She had a bunch of like Starbucks gift cards and they totally took those there. She just like screenshot them. And I took it in there, gave it to the guy and he was making her lattes. I just get regular coffees. But
Can I ask the obvious question? Guy, you know? Can I ask you, David, the obvious question? Yeah. Why on the Monsters of Rock cruise are they not serving Ellefson coffee?
Well, you know, Larry Morand, who's the promoter, he you know, Jeff Scott Soto got me on the boat, basically, because we did the Sail Away cruise or the Sail Away party, which I was really happy about because, you know, Jeff and I put this album out last October, and I think it was just it was really kind of a crown jewel for me. I thought it was a really great record and finally got to do something with Jeff. And then, you know, it turns out we're both busy with things. He's super busy with a bunch of stuff. And he was going right into Trans-Siberian Orchestra world. So that just kind of killed any real opportunity for us, you know, to go out and tour it. We were both in Europe in September. It's like, I don't know, a month in advance of the record. And said, dude, let's just go down and play. My band, you know, our band is from Italy. So I said, let's just go bang out 3 shows down there to just kind of prop it up. And we realized people liked the songs, even not knowing them. They were listenable, you know. So when Jeff hit me early in the year and he said, hey man, I think we might have an opportunity to do something with the Monsters of Rock. Is it great? Cause Larry did the Megadeth cruise. So I knew him from there. I've never done a Monsters of Rock cruise.
Okay.
I've done a ton of, you know, Shiprocks. They also did the motorboat cruise and stuff like that. So I've done a lot of work with them and all of the cruises are great. I mean, and I love them, you know? And, so to do another one with Larry was great. And he mentioned, he goes, you know, I don't know, we'll kind of figure something out. Maybe there'll be a coffee thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so honestly, it was easier just to show up and play bass. And, you know, cause once you start doing the coffee thing and all the events, it's like, now you gotta be that guy. And you know, how do you then go drink Starbucks and have your coffee? It's, you know, now you're like sort of cheating on yourself, you know? So, it was easier to just let Starbucks handle the coffee and I'll handle bass when needed, you know?
Right on. Well, man, you know, you said you had a great time on the cruise and we've been talking pretty much all night about the cruise.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken, you're probably the most famous guy on the cruise. I mean,
well, it depends on who you ask, I guess.
I mean, just going through the lineup, I mean, maybe Nuno Betancourt or Gary because of the Van Halen tie, but you know, if you're not the most famous, you're one of the top three most famous guys.
Did you even know that they had a basketball thing up there where Nuno like hurt himself?
I did not. And you know, Pat Badger's been a friend of mine, you know, the bass players, we kind of hang, right? And I know Nuno, You know, it's funny. I have a great Nuno story. So on Countdown to Extinction, right, we're bands getting big. We're starting to move into the arenas. And we're going to play the Worcester, the Centrum, which is an arena, right?
Sure.
And it ended up being sold out. And I get this phone call in my hotel room. And, you know, we always check in under fake names, you know. I was like Graham Cracker or some fake name like that, right? And so the phone rings, and I'm like, hello. And this pre-cell phones, right? So it's the landline in the room. I go, hello. And this really deep voice goes, hi, David. I said, yeah. Hey, it's Nuno Betancourt. So we're in Boston area.
Right.
I'm like, wow, this is cool. He goes, yeah, I talked to your management, and they gave me your number. So they said just to call you directly. I'm looking for some tickets, you know, to the show. And he's giving me this whole rap. I'm kind of going, oh, that's kind of cool. You know, I knew of Nuno, of course. And so I give him tickets, and then, you know, after the show, I'm thinking, oh, I wonder if he's going to be in the meet and greet, and, you know, he's a no-show. And I realize I just got punked. Like, this is some fan calling, and I gave him free. You know, I put it, you know, because one of these, well, don't put him under my name. Put him under my, you know, my manager, you know, Joe Schmo, right? Mm-hmm. So I do that. And so it's so funny. I always like had a resentment toward him, like toward Nuno. Like, he did nothing. You know, it's like if you have a dream and about somebody, and they're a real dick to you,
yep,
in the dream, and then you kind of resentment toward him. Like, fuck that guy. You know, and it's like, they had no idea. So, but I told Nuno that story. I did a rock and roll fantasy camp tour where we were the opening band on a, and then the tour was Extreme as the headliner in King's X, right? And
right.
So I told Nuno, I said, man, I got to tell you this story. You know, we had a good laugh. It was funny, you know. So it was, so that's my Nuno Betancourt story, which didn't involve him at all, actually. So,
completely hypothetical story.
Some nice douchebag name dropping him and scamming free tickets out of him. You know?
Too funny.
But whoever it was, at least they went to a sold out show.
Well, at least they got a good show. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, better than it was like two more seats filled, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. Could have sold those tickets.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, dude, let me swing it back to the boat, man, and back to where I was going with the being one of the most famous and certainly most recognizable guys on the boat. Can you have fun just roaming around the boat, or do you really get just swamped? Like, I just imagine guys like yourself, Stephen Piercy, you know, guys that are famous, but were definitely on MTV a lot.
Right.
You know, I can imagine every single person wants to tell you, you know, there was that time, and there was that Megadeth song on the radio, and that's when I met. So, you know, everybody has that story. Could you walk around the boat and enjoy yourself, or
I could, and it's probably just for some reason I've been blessed with the disposition that I can do that. You know, because I know, you know, there are some that cannot do that and won't do that, and, you know, it's security, it's an entourage, and which in itself makes a scene, right? And then people go, oh, I wonder who that is, right? And then that gravitates toward themselves all this attention that they really don't want, but God forbid that, you know, part of it, I think, is, God, what happens if you leave your room and no one recognizes you? You know, that's almost a bigger blow to that guy's ego. Like, you know, so let me make a big stink, walk through, and just be an asshole to everyone. Like, you can't touch me. And then after you do it, then you kind of turn around and, you know, that person for sure is going to feel kind of shitty. Like, oh, my God, there were just nice fans wanting my autograph, you know. So, you know, we see this at NAMM. We see that at these public appearances. And it's like,
right.
And some people, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I saw Vinnie Paul one year at NAMM, not long after Dime had left us. Yeah, there's an obvious reason why he would want to have, you know, security and be insulated, right? For the obvious reason. But otherwise, to just sort of, you know, draw this attention to yourself, you know, like I leave my room every day and my cabin on the boat. And I, you know, look, I'm prepared to go out and basically know I'm going to have a 12-hour meet and greet in front of me. You know,
right.
I'm going to walk down to get a pizza, and it's going to be some autographs and some, you know, photos and stuff. So I just kind of brace for it, you know, and I know that's kind of my role, you know. It's like, if, you know, when you get on the boat, be prepared to, I mean, I don't like to sit in my cabin and just watch the waves go by. I'd rather be out where the action is, where the people is. And quite honestly, after I did my gig, was it Friday night, the night before the cruise left, I was like, all right, that's kind of one thing done. I knew I was going to jam in the Rare Hair Jam. I got asked by Izzy Presley to be part of the Aerosmith jam where you were like the famous people sit in kind of unannounced with the,
right.
With
sure.
With the you know, the cruiser participants who are
VIP guests.
Thing. Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of this fun, kind of a rock and roll fantasy camp kind of moment, you know what I mean? And I saw a message from someone who was in the band and they were super thrilled. And so, you know, that's what we do, right? We make people happy. We give them that moments that they can't get anywhere else. And it's an exclusive moment like that. So, you know, I kind of look at it like at this point in my life, that's kind of what I do now.
People are safe though. They have passports.
Rock people's world, you know?
These people all have passports and stuff. Like they don't have any felonies and, like to get on the boat, I don't think you have to worry about anybody on there,
as
opposed to like some rural club out in the middle of nowhere where people they're barely even checking to see if they have weapons or anything.
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, I only saw one guy in the whole boat. I only saw one guy sort of losing his cookies into a garbage can over by the bar. You know, only one guy who got a little too hammered. And but other than that, you know, it's funny watching Kix, and I'd always wanted to see them. I've been a big fan. The Midnight Dynamite record was my record, you know, of theirs. Sure. And so I was so happy to see him and Brian, the guitar player, has become a friend of mine. And you know, even Steve, the singer, was saying, you know, on the boat, like, don't fight. Don't be an asshole. Be cool. You know, like he's kind of like making the public announcement, and he's an iconic guy in that world. And
sure.
So when he says, don't be a dick and don't get in a fight and keep your shit together, like people listen, like, oh, okay, I guess. All right. We'll do that. You know, as opposed to the old days when we're all young and it's like, you know, fuck that guy, get fight, you know, drunk, you know, you know, so I think, look, the people who can afford to go on cruises are 40s and 50s and 60-year-olds, and they're kind of over that anyway.
Right.
So it's you know, it's kind of grown up time, but yet, you know, people go harken back to their day. And for me personally, I was a fan of, I wanted to see Stephen play, you know, Stephen Piercy. I wanted to see Kix. I wanted to see Winger. You know, there's some so for me, it was fan time as well.
Right.
You know, see my friends who I grew up with and see them play. And, you know, there's a couple of, you know, real kind of crown jewel moments. I think the one that blew my mind, I was hanging with Will Hunt and his wife. Mm-hmm. And Will is a drummer.
He played for us.
He's for Piercy.
He played for you guys. He plays with Evanescence. It's kind of his day job right now. And he and his wife were at the bar opposite of Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And you know, Eric, where that is, right? So,
yeah.
And she's going on and on about this band Wigwam. I said, yeah, I saw that. I said, who are they? And like, oh my God, Peacekeeper, Peacemaker, whatever. There's a show on HBO and they used this Wigwam song, which is nice. Sort of relaunched them.
Huh.
And they're a band out of Norway, kind of like a 90s band, but kind of a throwback to the, you know, they kind of had a little bit of a sound of like Europe, right? The band Europe.
Sure.
Like that great guitar player, the singer kind of had a little Nikki Sixx in him, which I thought was kind of cool. But, and we went and saw him. I was like, this band is really friggin' good, man. And, you know, in America, we just kind of kind of missed them. You know, they weren't a thing here. While, you know, all the other stuff was going on around us, but you know, that was a really enjoyable moment. I went and saw him twice, actually. I loved them. And, Taiketto I thought was great. And I certainly have known of them. Our friend Greg Smith was playing bass for him, and Danny Vaughn, the singer, had sat in on a jam that I did with Joel Hoekstra. It's Joel's Hangover Jam. And I tell you, man, they were great. Danny has really taken care of himself. His voice is fantastic. He was a really good storyteller in his songs, and so that was cool. And then to see Chris Holmes, I thought that was a good one. I haven't seen... Last time I saw Chris Holmes, you know, Megadeth was one of the fluff bands to help bring the people in to fill the arena for the Rockstar movie. I don't know if you knew this or not.
Right.
Mark Wahlberg movie.
That
right?
was on. So when I was on the ship, we watched it. It was on the second or third night we were on there. Yep.
Yep. So we went to L.A. to go perform there on the stage, and we were advertised on the radio. Megadeth appearing at the, you know, the arena, sports arena, I think. So we played there. And the... that was the last time I'd seen Chris Holmes, and he was really skinny, not healthy. He and I always got along well, and and all. And it's funny, him and Robin Crosby, they kind of reminded me of each other.
They look similar.
Yeah, tall, these tall, really domineering guys. And, of course, they were really kind of iconic guys in the sound of their bands, of course. And so it's just great to see Chris. And, you know, he's kind of got this fun, self-deprecating humor. He doesn't take himself so seriously. He's, he's been through some shit. You know?
When he plays, he's got that heavy metal soul, and he has that tone. It's like a little bit of chorus or whatever he puts on it.
Yeah.
And you know it's him. It just takes you back to Wasp Live in the Raw, and it's sick. And he was having so much fun at this, you know. And it was great to see him so much healthier and starting to bounce around, and he could, I would love to see him back with Wasp. I think that has to happen.
And I don't know that that'll happen. And I tell you what, how about his, you know, he had this guitar player and bass player from some group out of the UK, and that singer, man, that guy sang the Blackie stuff great. I mean, it was really, really good. And then Chris would sing his own stuff, you know, from his records. And you know, so I thought those were, you know, a couple of highlight moments. Shiraz Lane, who is another band, I think, out of Finland, who, you know, look like an 80s Sunset Strip band, but are young Finnish guys, and they freaking have great songs. You know, it's nice when you hear a song, see a band that you've never seen or heard, and you stay because every song is really enjoyable, and you can latch on to what it is. And and I'd say for me, probably the other one was Vandenberg, because, you know, before Adrian joined Whitesnake, which is probably where most people know him from, I knew I had that at Vandenberg, that first Vandenberg record that came out in 1982. And they came through town, or they, nearby me in Minnesota, where I grew up before I moved to L.A. in 83. They'd played the Sioux Falls, South Dakota. There's an arena there. And Ozzy was there. Jakey Lee had just joined Ozzy, and Vandenberg was the opener. And it was so, I was so cool, man. I told Adrian, I go, dude, how freaking cool, man. Come on, you're back. It's Adrian Vandenberg, you know. It's, the logo is iconic. So, you know, just George Lynch was great. You know, it's just fun to just sit there and be a fan and just, you know, listen to, you know, River of Love and all the great freaking George the Lynch Mob songs, you know.
Hell yeah. Well, it sounds like you had a fun time there, man, but I'm going to change directions a little bit here. I'm going to go to your actual musical project that you're promoting right now, which, God knows, it seems like every month there's a different David Ellefson musical project, but we just finished the Kings of Thrash, I guess, and now we're up to Death, and it's Death, right? I'm saying it right?
Well, if you're German, it's Death. If you're American, it's Dieth. So it's Dieth is really the name
of it. Is it Dieth? Yeah. Is that
I'm saying that because in German, you know, it's the I before the E before the I, right? And it sounds opposite.
Dieth sounds cooler. Dieth.
Yeah.
It's Dieth. The last time I had you on, you told me it was Death.
I did?
You did.
No, there's no
you
way.
You did.
And I've been
arguing with everybody. It's Death. And they're like, no, it's not. I'm like,
no, it's Dieth.
Yeah, maybe I just showed you the courtesy because you said it wrong and I didn't
probably
want to, you know, correct you on the air. You know?
I know.
Probably did. But I will say this. This record fucking kills. My goodness, is this thing heavy and brutal and everything I really did not expect, especially just because of the Ellefson Soto record, which, you know, I just kind of thought you were going more that direction.
Yeah.
This thing is an ass kicker, man.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, as you've known me, you know, with the Lucids is a sort of a pillar. And then there's the Ellefson Soto and stuff. And then there's Kings of Thrash and then there's Dieth, you know? So it's kind of like, those are the four corners of my house, my musical house. And, you know, the truth of it is I learned years ago, especially in the late 90s, the Megadeth Risk album, I think, was the best example that, you know, you can't do everything you want under one brand, you know. And now that I'm essentially a free agent, you know, so to speak, I find it better to just be very focused on a sound and a thing within each setting. Right.
Okay.
And don't try to do it all under one umbrella. I think it's confusing. You know, people, I mean, like, think about any product, you know, you buy anything, whatever it is, a Chevrolet, a Mr. Coffee, whatever, you expect certain feature sets and certain things, right, around whatever that is you're buying, right? So Same is true with bands and the sort of the branding of the name, you know. When and I think with the Dieth record, what we were able to do is not just make it a one-dimensional death metal record, you know.
Okay.
As much as it started there, even the very first song we put out, In the Hall of the Hanging Serpents, it's heavy, of course. It's got super, you know, heavy vocals and that. But there's a melody to it, you know, and there's a clear verse and a chorus and a solo section, and it's written as a real song, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we did that with this album. And I don't know if you've heard the whole thing.
I don't know.
Dave Palm has sent you the, mm-hmm. you know, there's a ballad on it that I sing, you know. So I just figured, you know what, fuck it, man. Let's put Our Sweet Child of Mine on this record right out of the gate. It worked for Guns N' Roses. You know, why wait till album three? You know, just fucking widen the gate and put it all on there now. So, and I wasn't expecting to sing on it at all. It's just that I submitted some stuff and those guys were like, dude, you're singing. I'm like, all right. And, it, you know, I've read the Kiss books and I'm, you know, reading about Ace Frehley. He'd write songs and he didn't want to sing. So he'd have Gene and Paul or Peter or somebody sing his songs, you know, Cold Gin and all these huge songs. And finally they just said, no, you're going to sing your shit now, you know, and thank God they did. And he did shock me. Right. And that,
yeah,
you know, that allowed Ace to be the Ace we know today. He's out. He's look, he'll be on Monsters Rock Cruise next year, but now he can go out as Ace Frehley. Same with Chris Holmes. He's singing sure. now. He's doing his own stuff. So, you know, and I've sung some stuff when I've gone out solo, but now to be committed to it, you know, in a recording setting is good. And I think that, you know, I used to be a tenor. You know, he's kind of be that Michael Anthony high tenor, and as over the years my voice has dropped. Now I'm clearly a baritone, so I think the tuning of the band sits well with my register and my range, and it's you know, it I don't know, kind of just all lined up. So
yeah, well, it is the curveball in the listen when you're listening to the record, and all of a sudden, I mean, it's going 100 miles an hour, and then what's that? It's called what? Walk with Me Forever, right? Is the
Walk with Me Forever? Yeah,
is the. Yeah. Because it's all of a sudden, it's a true ballad. It's not a
it's not
a death metal ballad, whatever that would be. It is a true. You're like going 100 miles an hour, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa!
Check this out. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the cool things about this record. Like, I wouldn't even call this death metal personally. I agree. It's more. It's definitely extreme metal, but it's not the full on. You know, it's not. It could be, because obviously the guys that you're playing with are well skilled in that, but
yeah.
Here's an interesting
thing that I've noticed. So these guys, Michal, the drummer from Decapitated, Guilherme, guitarist from Entombed AD. So these guys certainly grew up on my music, right? Mm-hmm. Megadeth, Rust in Peace, and the 90s sure. stuff. Because of their age, that's when they started listening to music. So here I am coming into their world, which is way more extreme, way heavier, different tunings. And I had some experience with it working with Max Cavalera with Soulfly.
Sure.
I've had bands and done things with Andreas Kisser, more cover band kind of stuff. So not, you know, too much of like Sepultura kind of stuff with him. But I did do some stuff. I actually did play in a Sepultura, kind of a, I forgot what song it was. Something they did a couple years ago, they asked me to play it. It was kind of a sort of a celebration of some Sepultura stuff. So I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with kind of their chord figures and, you know, note choices and stuff and their riffs. But I got to be honest with you, Chris. I'm the new guy in this world. As much as I'm kind of the old guard and the sort of the older statement of it, I'm like the new guy. So I, quite honestly, am the student of this music, you know, and it's been really good for me to just, you know, again, broaden my horizons and just be teachable and, you know, to learn what they're doing and how they're doing it. And open myself up into their world, you know, and we do all of our work over in Europe. We do everything in Poland and we cut a lot of the record in Germany, with, Christian Cole as producer.
Sure.
So, you know, I think it needs that. This is not, we don't come over here and go to the beach in California and make a record like that. You know, I think it needs this sort of dark clouds in the sky and, you know, It needs that. So it's, you know.
So you want to go to Chris's house to make it. You want to go to where Chris lives.
Yeah.
As you can see. I do live in California.
Your house, I guess, Chris. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Well, look, I live in Arizona. The sun's still out. It's like a blue, not a cloud in the sky, you know. So you don't make great, like, records like this, I think, in the sun. You know what
right.
I mean?
Like, yeah. You need Norway or Poland or somewhere like that that's just exactly. frigid and cold and ugh.
But cold, dark, and yeah, exactly.
I do want to say this, though, about this record. And again, people are going to hear it here. June 2nd is when it actually comes out and when people can hear the whole thing. You've released a few songs, but you haven't released, like, to me, the song to be released. And not that I'm criticizing or anything, but the song that I think identifies the most with the record that tells people that it is just not straight a million miles an hour is Free Us All. Because it goes with that harsh vocal, but then there's the clean vocal, and then it, you know, then it switches back again, and it's such a cool song. It's one of the best extreme songs I've heard this year, man. It's really, really strong.
You know, thank you for saying that. And it's funny, a lot of people have been doing a lot of the press now, you know, ahead of the record. A lot of people have brought that song up because toward the end, there's like this Allman Brothers.
Yeah,
thing. It kind of starts out with this swing groove and this walking bass line, and then there's this kind of Aerosmith Sweet Emotion bass vibe that I copped on it. And at the end, it's like, you know, in memory of Elizabeth, whatever, you know, it's the Allman Brothers song. Right. So it's kind of like got all this stuff. And you're right, me and Glare may take turns on the vocals. He sings most of it, but I do the clean parts. And it's, you know, which, you know, we kind of throw it all in, and it's, you know, it's fun to do that because, again, we're of different ages. We've got different experiences musically. And then to bring all that together and, you know, what, honestly, I guess maybe it's because we're a three piece too. It helps, you know, sure. that it's a lot easier to kind of, we can be more nimble and move around on things and, you know, support each other with our ideas, you know, to bring something like that in. I've had my experiences having to expand the horizons in the 90s with Megadeth. You know, we mm-hmm. came from Rust in Peace, and by the end of the decade, we were making Risk, you know. So, I mean, I've gone the gamut, you know, with managers and label people and producers, you know, putting us and me through the ringer of you know broadening horizons and making those kind of records. So for me, when people bring in deviations, as long as it's kind of within the confines of what we're doing, I'm all for it, man. I think it makes for a better listening experience. And right, you know, the record To Hell and Back obviously has a fitting title. all three of us have gone through some shit. But as everybody, you know, everybody's going through shit.
Of course.
You know? And so I think the title's pretty universal. And you know, it encompasses, it's a story, you know. It's really, we didn't set out to make a concept record, but in a weird kind of way it kind of turned out to be. At least it's a journey, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to for people to hear it. It seems to be something people are definitely intrigued about.
It's crazy good. And I'm not just, I know we're friends and all, but you know me well enough to tell you, I would tell you I don't like it, you know?
Yeah. Or you wouldn't be talking about it at all.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, oh, so what are you working on after this? You know?
Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. That record. I forgot all about that.
Oh yeah. No. So with this, I mean, these guys are obviously in Poland. Any kind of ability to tour, even if it's touring Europe and not here, or?
Yeah, we're doing dates. We actually have some dates second week of June, then we go right into the Grass Pop Festival. Okay. And we've got some dates in the Czech Republic, France, Portugal. So it's, you know, but it's just with the timing of when the record's coming out, sort of missed the booking deadlines for a lot of the festivals. But sure. You know, this first album was just, you know, it's just propping it up, giving the presentation of what the band is, what we sound like. And it seems like every time we put a video out, we get more offers for more shows. You know, people right. are like, oh my god, this sounds amazing, and we weren't even aware of this. So, you know, part of this is kind of this initial awareness campaign, you know, with this first record to put it up. And you know, we're excited about, you know, getting, you know, writing more stuff. We've already, it's a band that's seems to go in these really fun creative spurts where all of a sudden a new dose of songs come out, you know, a new batch of stuff. So, and now as we're performing together, we've already done some rehearsals, but we're going to obviously rehearse in early June. You know, being in the room together after you've made a record, Eric, you probably can attest to this too. You know, when you're putting songs together, you're one band. When you've gone through the studio process, it creates another band. It raises the bar. The parts are now created. They're forever set in stone as a recorded piece of music. And you commit to those parts, and then you take those parts now, and that basically molds you into becoming the band that the people will see. And
that's right.
What I've found is that it's, you know, there's a little bit of this kind of stoner doom thing in the sound of the band when we're together that I was not expecting. And I think is very cool. And that's just, again, that's just the three of us in a small room, you know, jamming through stuff. And I'm kind of going, wow, there's this kind of additional element that it sort of came out in the room that I didn't hear it as much in the studio, but I'm hearing it as we're playing together. So, you know, people have asked us, like, what kind of music is it? And we've just sort of done this hashtag, We Are Dyeth.
There you go.
Right? That's what we are, you know?
Yep.
And that's what it is. We're Dyeth.
Absolutely. It. Now, dude, I just got to ask you one last one before I let you go. And it has nothing to do with the band necessarily, but it's, when you texted me last night, you texted me the Monsters of Rock follow-up video to put on the socials. And at the exact moment that you texted me, I'm watching the WWE pay-per-view, and on it was that guy, Bad Bunny, the rapper guy or whatever you call him. And he made me think of you in the fact that this guy has, you know, 3 Grammys, he headlines Coachella, he's done, you know, he's a music superstar, and he's done what there is to do. But yet he's out there risking his life doing this WWE, jumping around and going crazy. Now, I'm not saying you're risking your life, but you're at a point in your life where you don't need to be doing 14 bands and coffee and movies and all of these different projects. What is it that keeps you doing this stuff? Is it just the love of the game or...
I mean, honestly, I could retire, you know, and even today I sat around after I woke up and did press all morning. I sat around on my couch and watched Netflix and go, I should probably just fucking retire. You know what I mean? It's like, why do I keep doing this? But, you know, then I'm like, I got to jump on the horn with Chris Aiken tonight. And here we are, you know,
right.
And it's, you know, you see me, I'm lit up, man. I'm excited, you know, and Eric, right. We're on the boat. We're in the midst of stuff that's happening. Music's around us. The people are excited. And to be honest with you, you know, I think it's funny when we were on the Megadeth cruise, Kiko, had pointed out, he goes, you know, I'm fed by this stuff. You know what I mean? It's a life force to me, you know?
Sure.
And now, you know, we're all put on the planet for our various vocations and skills and things that, you know, the creator gave us, you know? And it's like, I think when you turn that faucet off, that's the beginning of dying.
Right.
You know, I think that's, you know, and, you know, we live in a different world where we don't work 30 years, get the golden watch, and then we go play golf forever. You know, at least that's not the world I grew up in. Right. And so for me, if I, you know, if I stop doing music, like, what the hell else am I going to do? You know, and it doesn't mean that I got to always, I guess, probably even play professionally and, you know, do all this kind of stuff. But, you know, I love doing it, you know, and all my friends that I grew up with are, you know, they're also famous because they had success, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when I call them to play on something, they probably have a, you know, a pretty good track record. And so, you know, I guess the one thing is people, oh, a new super group. It's like, it's not a fucking super group. I called Frank Bello because he writes really good songs and I like him. So we make a band together, you know,
right.
Metal Allegiance, you know, we call Skolnick and Portnoy and Mingy because like, we know each other, we're friends, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all famous in their bands, but like we hang out and, you know, plug in and start writing tunes the same way we did in our garage bands when all of us were kids, you know?
Right.
So I think I like being around people that have not lost that love of music, the love of, I don't know, let's plug in and see what we can do. And once we start feeling it, it's like we think about, okay, which record company are we going to call? All right, let's get an agent, let's get a manager, let's go. Ah, you know, right. And I think I've always been that guy in every band I've been in. I've been that guy that made those calls and sort of put it all together. And, you know, so, you know, I'm not doing this going, God, I hope one of these takes me to the top again. Fuck, I've already been to the top, you know, got the Grammy over here. I'm good, you know, and right. it's not about that at all for me. It's just about, I just love doing it, man. I just, you know, and I'm not that good at golf, you know, so may as well do this.
Nice. Nice. Well, you're doing it well with the new record called Dieth. To Hell and Back is the record. It is June the 2nd that it comes out. And David, where should we tell people to go to keep up with you or Dieth or Lucid or?
Sure. DavidEllison.com is kind of the central headquarters where it all is. You know, Facebook is same thing, /DavidEllison or however they do that. Same with Instagram and that. So, and then, you know, obviously every band's got its own thing. KingsOfThrash.com, DiethBand.com, blah, blah, blah. You know,
right.
You know, just do a fucking Google search.
There you go. There. Google, that's your homepage.
Google me.
Just Google me.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, dude, I figured we'd wrap up with Don't Get Mad, Get Even. It's
great.
It's another pounder in the head with a sledgehammer. But one more time, last time, Dieth, To Hell and Back, out June 2nd. Make sure you buy it. Don't just stream it, people. For God's sakes, buy it. David went to Poland to record it, for God's sakes. Hook him up with a dollar or two by buying the record, all right? And
gas
and
is expensive.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. And plane tickets and everything else. So.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Pierogies, everything
exactly.
Else.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to end with Don't Get Mad, Get Even. And David, as always, man, it's a pleasure having you right here on Chris Aker Presents.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Good to see you, Eric.
All right, bro. Take care, man.
See you, man. I know how it goes. I'll show you the answer where.